Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us every Sunday at 7 a.m. and p.m. We are streamed live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. Lots of information. We are linked to our guests' websites, so lots of information for you to gather along the way. I have to pass on sort of a personal note that it is so wonderful. I am so grateful. Mother Nature has seen it fit, I guess, in a manner of speaking, to give California a nice series of rain showers over the last few months. And I'm not saying that anybody's saying the drought is over, but I'll tell you what, every little bit helps, and it sure feels good when you stand out in it when it isn't freezing. Of course, then it would be snow, wouldn't it? And that would be a lot of fun as well. But it's just really nice to have a respite from the 3 to 5 years lack of moisture helping to keep things growing here in the along the Central Coast, but up and down California. I know there are other areas of the world as well that sure could use the rain as well. So we hope that they will get their fair share as well. We have a very fascinating program on tap for this program. We are going to delve into an area that I think has probably received almost as much, if not more, research and study and investigation as some of the other subjects we've talked about, death and dying, or transitioning, if you will, especially when it comes to trying to figure out where certain aspects of our personality come from and how we can really get to a point where somewhere along the way we have got to get out of the old patterns, the old. I remember back in the 80s and early 90s, a lot of the personal growth programs that I went through, they talked a lot about other people affecting your makeup, your pattern. And it was almost as if they were blaming mother and father, sisters and brothers, co-workers, whoever came into your life. It was their fault, in a manner of speaking. And there was a bit of a shift, and we began to realize that, well, we're still responsible. We are still responsible for who and what we are and the actions, the words, the thoughts, the deeds. And so we're moving into a new era, and we're going to be talking about that with the founder and co-owner of what I think is a fascinating concept, if you will. It's more than that. It's techniques. Higher Brain Living. We are talking with Dr. Michael Cotton, and thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
My pleasure, Richard. Glad to be here.
This is an area, again, that raises one of the first questions that was addressed time and time again in school for me, especially biology, or in psychology, when they would say that we only utilize about 10% of our brain. First question to you is that true? Has that been true, that it has only been 10%?
Well, I think the reality of that is that nobody actually knows what percentage of our brain we use.
It figures.
Yeah, that particular idea has fallen somewhat out of favor with modern neuroscience, because they see that basically all of the brain lights up in some way at some time.
Mm-hmm.
The issue, I think, is not so much what percentage of it we're actually using, but how much of its potential. For instance, just to show that we're using a certain area of the brain, we may only be using 10% of the potential that's within that area. And so there's an ability to create function on a much higher level within these same existing brain structures. So what I do think we can say from a scientific perspective is that the higher brain, okay, and I can talk more specifically about that if you want, but what we would refer to as the higher brain is grossly underutilized. And there have been some studies showing that we're actually using about 5 to 10% of the potential of the higher brain, specifically in this case, the prefrontal cortex of the brain. So suffice to say, no matter how we slice it or, you know, the semantics around it, there's a whole lot more potential in our brain than what we're actualizing or utilizing.
this to me is so fascinating because we have been working for decades, if not longer, but probably more consciously for the last few decades to try, especially if we go back, say, to the 60s in particular with Transcendental Meditation and some of the other programs. I mean, I went through in the early 80s, I went through a program called Life Spring. And then in the late 80s and early 90s, a program called Omega Vector and Delta Vector. And all of these programs were designed to help us to see our patterns, to see where they come from, to deal with them, and then to move on to really live richer, fuller lives. And now I'm hearing that doing that really doesn't help. It really, and it's not.
I hate it when that happens.
Really, and what's even the hardest aspect of it is the fact that a lot of people have spent a lot of money to go through these programs. And now I have to say that the one program that I went through, the latter, which was Omega and Delta Vector, they were actually the same program. They just changed names. Their focus was on Desjardins' work.
Oh, yeah.
And so forth. But it wasn't exclusively that. But it was in an effort to get people to make that shift consciously, to be in the moment. And I think that that's really where we are basically headed, to unleash your potential through the power of your brain. But I'm curious, and I want to get into this. I want to talk also about the connection to the other aspects of who and what we are as human beings. But in terms of the brain, there's a reference to a lower brain, and of course you've made reference to the higher brain. Mm-hmm. And how does that relate, if we can dive into this aspect, on a spiritual level to the higher self of the being?
Awesome. Great, great questions. And let me first start by saying is that I am not so much one that believes that many of these other things don't work. In fact, I think most things do work for some people to some degree. The challenge becomes that not a lot of people really have genuine transformative change in their life. And if they do, that change rarely becomes sustainable. So we have to start looking. That's what I did, was start diving very deeply into this whole human potential movement and personal transformation and the self-help industry. One of the things I like to say is, you know, why does self-help not really help or not really usually help?
Yeah.
And so what I'm suggesting is that the reason there's a diminishing return on most things, or we never really fully get there with most things, is that what has not been well understood is the impact that brain physiology plays within our ability to even make sustainable change, no matter what path we are choosing. What I'm insisting is that what is really primary within this is that we humans have a battle going on between the old lower survival-based part of our brain and this new, most newly evolved higher part of our brain. And that lower survival stress-based part of our brain is generally winning out, arresting our development, stealing our potential and our energy from the higher potentials that await in this new higher brain complex. And so I think what we're seeing is that what is primary to all of this is helping the brain create that shift in physiology to get more of that higher brain online, so to speak. And then I loved what you said about not only the brain, I can't remember exactly how you phrased it, but not only did you want to know about the brain, but basically then how that applies or it to other things in our life and these other elements of our life. And to me, that's really what it's all about. Mm-hmm. We lead with this shift in the brain because I believe it's fundamental. I believe it's what's holding back our personal development, our cultural development, our species development, is this shift into the higher brain, because there's a correlate within our physiology, within our brain physiology, to everything that's happening in our life. So to be able to improve relationships or financial situations or our emotional well-being or physical fitness or our career opportunities, we have to be able to get energy into that higher brain and then move into those areas of our life from that higher brain perspective. If we don't, there's a that lower brain is trying to create sameness. And we can talk more about why this actually is, the biology around this. But the lower brain is trying to create sameness and habituate our old life. It's wanting to create the same thing over and over again, even if that really isn't serving, as you described it, our higher self.
Right.
It's designed to keep us alive and survive.
You know, there are so many television programs as well as movies coming out that are dealing with the evolution of man, if you will, in its various forms, whatever they might be it monstrous sci-fi or transformational in terms of to the next level in evolution for the human being. You know, I've seen, for example, Star Trek episodes where the individual who is humanoid is allowed at least to transform into this golden body of light and then is able to drift off into outer space. And I thought,
all right.
Okay, well, that's an interesting life. I'm not sure what we would do. But, you know, he seems to like it. And on and on and on with these different aspects of transformation. Now, this program is designed to seek out and find not new life and civilization, but new ways of living. The old ways aren't working, and all you have to do is look around you, and it's pretty evident. And so we're looking for those new ways of living. What is the core? What is this, I want to say, source material? Because I'd be hard-pressed to believe that over the course of what you have set up are like 22, 24 steps, if you will, in this process of higher brain living. What is the core of this? Because I can't believe that we're going to sit there with a facilitator and we're going to talk biology the whole time. You know what I'm saying?
That doesn't sound very exciting.
No, I went through that in high school and grade school, and you know, I missed a lot of it. I'm still relearning some of it these days.
Right. No, the great news with the Higher Brain Living Program is you really don't have to talk any biology at all. It's what the 22-step program is that. Let me just back up one step beyond that. What higher brain living does is create this shift of energy from the lower brain into the higher brain.
You're talking about recreating synapses, if you will, redirecting the energy flow.
Yes, that's right. And I believe not just redirecting what's in there, but we're being able to promote a latent energy source that is largely dormant in the body. And this is an energy source, for instance, that's been looked at and talked about and systems built up around for thousands of years from terms that have been used in, you know, Eastern healing techniques as chi or ki or in or prana. Mm-hmm. We call it, sometimes refer to it as subtle energy in the West. But one of the things we know is that there's an energy source in the body. And in fact, from a modern scientific perspective, you know what I'm talking about, right, Richard? Mm-hmm. When I'm talking about these pathways in the body,
exactly,
that harbor this energy source that acupuncturists have leveraged and utilized,
right,
to a whole variety of different techniques. The Taoist healers, they've called them nadi points in yoga, mm-hmm, that there's pathways in the body that are associated with a latent energy source. And now Western science has looked at this and we've been able to tell, and this is a perspective, it's not the only perspective, but from a Western scientific perspective, we know that these pathways that run through the body, primarily through the back of the body, are exquisitely energy sensitive and energy dense. In fact, they have a word called piezoelectric, that what that means is when these pathways are compressed or stretched or contacted in certain ways, they will release energy. And in fact, one of the reasons for that is that those pathways are rich in what's called microfilaments and microtubules. This is just the type of tissue that's in that part of the body. But it happens to be microfilaments and microtubules are crystalline in nature. And so it really, from, again, looking at it from this scientific perspective, we see that it's very energy exquisite. And when it's contacted in certain ways, this energy moves or flows in the body. And again, there's a lot of systems built up around that. Within our system, what we've done is basically crack a code around how to gently touch the body in a very, very precise and very specific way in a certain protocol that causes this release of energy to move into untapped or dormant areas of the prefrontal cortex of the brain. And the way we know that is, one, is that clients going through this started reporting the kinds of things that show up that we know from other neuroscientific research are associated with the higher brain. We could talk more about that later if you want. Mm-hmm. But we then started to measure this as people were going through this 45-minute long session where a facilitator is cueing these pathways as they're laying face down on a massage table. Facilitator is cueing these pathways. Energy is releasing through the body and it's moving up to the higher brain. Now, we've put EEG on people going through this and we can see this energy increasing in the prefrontal cortex of the brain along with a lot of other positive brainwave changes. But there's increased voltage, there's increased power in that part of the brain. And over this 22-step program, you have 22 of these sessions, 45-minute long sessions with a trained facilitator. Each of those sessions helps deepen that connection between that energy source and the higher brain. Very quickly into the process, and this is why we actually do live presentations, to be able to see this part of it. As we cue these pathways and that energy moves up into the higher brain, that higher brain starts to wake up. It starts to want more energy. It starts to want to light up more of that dormant potential that's been arrested by this lower brain physiology, that lower brain is putting the brakes on. So now once it starts to open up and starts to flow into that higher brain, it starts to create its own organic response, which is spontaneous. That is this response of breath starting to move through your body. And this is an amazing feeling. And a lot of people confuse this when I say it, if they don't see it. When I say it, they think, oh, we're teaching them a new way to breathe, or it's a breath work technique or mm-hmm. something. It's nothing like that. This change in breath is a recurring wave-like movement that's a feedback mechanism generated by the higher brain. And you're not actually consciously taking a breath. You're consciously aware of it happening, but it feels more like something is breathing you. And so it's an absolutely wonderful feeling because it's associated with stress dumping out of that lower stress brain, more energy going to the higher brain. So over this 22-step program, the facilitator is cueing these pathways, energy, each of these 22 steps, each of these 45-minute long sessions, more energy is building in that higher brain, and your brain is getting more sophisticated at self-energizing. And so it's building and building and building and building, and you're having the feeling of empowerment, of well-being, of confidence, of clarity, of purpose, all of those things that are hallmarks of energy in the higher brain. So part of the program is that every single step has a session that helps direct energy into the higher brain, helps your brain learn to create its own feedback to generate its own energy up into itself. And there's a shift over this time in center of gravity where we start to just have more energy available in that higher brain. But more than that, and what I learned a long time ago is that it wasn't enough just to show that we could change the brain. What else this program entails is the ability to very energy efficiently apply that higher brain response, that empowered state, to all areas of your life. And so there's a guidebook as clients go through this program. They leave their 45-minute long session with their facilitator. They've had an upload into the higher brain. Stress is dumped out of their physiology. They're clear, they're confident, they're purposeful. And then they take this guidebook, and each of these steps has a specific action step, something that the recipient does to leverage or actualize or utilize that higher brain energy in their life. And so part of this early on is you create a new map of your life. You're able to, from that higher brain place, to find the areas that are holding you back, whether it's relationships or careers or fitness or whatever it is, confidence. You're able to find those areas. And then there's ways to start associating the change you want to make in your life with that higher brain response. And so there's actually action steps to take from this higher brain place to bring about change in all of these different areas. And there's assessments performed through this whole program to see that that is exactly what is happening. And so we expect that a person not only creates a shift in their higher brain, but is able to use that and bring that to make very profound and sustainable transformative change in many areas of their life.
When we come back from our break, I want you to talk about the connection between the higher brain and the other aspects of our being. And specifically, I want to talk about the heart, because there's been a lot of conversation over the years with especially one of our guests, Greg Braden, who's talked about the significance of the heart and emotion and those kinds of things. So we'll come back and we'll talk more about that. I'm Richard Dugan. We're talking with Dr. Michael Cotton, and he has a fascinating process that is available, Higher Brain Living. And we encourage you to check it out. The website is just that. It's higherbrainliving.com, and you can find out more information not only about Dr. Michael Cotton, who is the founder and co-owner of Higher Brain Living, but also about the program, the practices, and so forth. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and in the process of looking for those new ways of living, we've kind of found some new ways of, I suppose you might say, thinking and processing of information through a rewiring. I have to kind of put it that way. Dr. Michael Cotton, who is our guest of the Higher Brain Living program, that it's a process, as I kind of alluded to when you were beginning your description, about rewiring the brain of sorts in terms of a new energy and information paths and so forth. That it sounds to me, and correct me if I've misunderstood this, I want to get it right. It sounds to me like you're doing this rewiring so that you don't have to deal with all of that old stuff and the old stories of why you are the way you are because of your past issues and so forth. You get to move on from that. It's a whole, from my understanding, it's a whole new realm. It is evolutionary, but I think even greater than that, it is revolutionary to the extent that it gives us that opportunity that we've all been looking for. Because I don't know about you, but there are a lot of people that I associate with who are watching the rest of the world go by and going, well, where's mine? When do I get mine? And I said, well, okay, but if you're on the spiritual path, it isn't about getting yours. It's about being who you are and what you were brought here to be, why you came here to be who you are. Let's talk a little bit about that in terms of, the moving on to the next level in one's life. Your purpose in life, what was it and what is it today?
My purpose in life today is to disseminate this higher brain living movement into the world on a large enough scale that I can see in my lifetime that it was a major player in helping large groups of humanity make a shift from the lower brain dominated way we live our lives into the higher part of the brain that frees up our authentic self, and that from that we can start living a fearlessly authentic life. And when enough of us do that, we create a new culture. And I want to see that new culture, you know, create widespread social change. And that's really the driving force behind me to continue this development, to continue to get this into the world, to continue to impact more people, because it takes only a significant minority creating a new physiology and living in a new way I believe, to really make widespread social change.
Well, now, you yourself could have gone about your business and continued in your practice as, say, a chiropractor and doing the things that you were doing. And, you know, that's not a bad living. And, you know, you're helping people, getting their meridians straightened out, getting their spines fixed and all this kind of stuff. And it seemed like good enough. What was it that triggered in you this urge, this need, this impulse to say, no, there has to be more?
Yeah, well, when I look back at my life, I see that I was on this path that from a fairly early age. And for whatever reason, I was a very stressed out child, and in some ways a very sick child. I had a good home, a solid family, but I went through life with a lot of fear and a lot of stress. I developed debilitating migraine headaches. I was put on heavy-duty barbiturates as a child. Had all kinds of in and out of doctor's office visits, and nothing really helped me. And I kind of went to high school, stumbled my way through high school, got out of high school with no direction, no purpose. I was really just lost. I was just going through the motions and, you know, passing my classes and just getting by and living for the weekend, you know. And I was told to enroll in college because that's, you know, what families told you to do. And I had no idea why or what I would be doing. And I enrolled in the nearest college to where I lived at the time, and was made it through 1 year before I was thrown out for being academically ineligible with a 0.57 GPA. And I started taking minimum wage jobs, and for the next few years just kind of floundered around with that. And at some point along the line, I started getting interested in consciousness and consciousness studies, and just started to wonder about this stuff. But I just had no direction. And there was the strangest thing is that I was at one of my my most recent job at the time in a steel and aluminum factory, just standing there, and I just had the shift inside of me that I had a whole new internal sense and a new identity. I all of a sudden had this surge of confidence, of clarity. It was as if, and we use this term a lot now, but it was as if I could see from 50,000 feet, and I could see my life and the trajectory of my life leading up to where I was right now. And I saw where it was headed, which was absolutely nowhere. And it was as if I could now see it objectively, like it was out in front of my consciousness, as opposed to me being embedded in it and just going through the rat race and the maze on a day-to-day basis. And so I had this kind of new perspective and this new feeling of confidence and this new identity and this new clarity. And it was as if I instantly knew right then that my whole life was different and was going to be different, and I was going to change it. And so I then immediately left that job. I started trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. I started wondering why this had happened to me, what it meant, you know, why me? And I started to then pursue a career based on information that I was gathering, and I decided to go into the chiropractic profession because I felt like it that held one of the pieces to what I was looking for, which was this whole human potential thing. What had happened to me? How did it happen? Why did it happen spontaneously? How does it happen to other people? It was like that kind of became just an obsessive drive for me. And so I checked in with the chiropractic college to find out about enrolling in the program to go back to college. And they, of course, told me that it was a 4-year postgraduate doctoral degree, and my 0.57 GPA and partial year of college was not going to get me in. And I had a whole lot of work to do. And so they very kindly guided me to universities that might accept me to do my undergraduate work. And by this time, I'm lit up. I'm on fire. It's like I'm a different person. I'm confident. I'm clear. And I went back and I just started acing my undergrad classes. I started taking 32 credit hours a semester, you know, more than twice the normal load in physics and chemistry and all of these sciences. And I finally got my undergrad work done, got into the chiropractic college. I went through the chiropractic college, a 4-year doctoral program. I did it on an accelerated program in 3 years and graduated on the national dean's list with academic honors. And I say that part simply because it was so strikingly different than my past had been or my academic past had been. And so I started then looking at, I knew all along that chiropractic was just a small piece of this puzzle. And so I started to practice it. I developed a wellness center. I started using different quasi-chiropractic techniques, learning different energy work techniques all the time, studying Eastern healing arts, studying Zen Buddhism, studying the Vedanta, developmental psychology, looking at all of these different approaches. And what had hit me along the way within the chiropractic education was how the brain seemed to be left out of almost all of these equations. It was kind of an aha moment when I saw that so many people were trying to create transformation with so many different vehicles and so many different pathways and wisdom traditions and healing techniques. But what seemed to consistently be missed once I had really understood this was that change in physiology was imperative. And you talked about, for instance, meditation techniques. I think that's a classic example. And I'm a proponent of meditation. But the reality of it is the studies that we have now coming out of major universities that are showing profound brain changes with meditation, it so often takes so long. That there are Tibetan meditators that were studied, for instance, that they can conclusively show significant changes in these higher centers of their brain. But often the ones included in the study had 4-hour-a-day meditation practices for 30-plus years. And so what I'm insisting is that the reason it takes so long to make transformative change and to make profound brain change in that way is that the brain is being ignored in the technique. We're learning techniques to look at our mind and look at our thoughts arise. And it's positive and it's productive. But to really get the shift in physiology, I believe, takes years of dedication. Well, what I realized and wondered at the time is, what if we can create the shift in physiology right from the start, open that part of the brain up, because everything else is dependent upon that. And so that idea kind of just became my life's purpose. And I started developing a technique, integrating many of these things that I'd learned over the years, and just working at a feverish pitch, so to speak. It got a hold of me in a way that you said, yeah, you could have done a lot of things. Well, I believe initially that might have been true, but I don't feel like it is true anymore. It kind of feels like the choiceless choice to me. It's like, yes, I'm making a choice, but I honestly don't see any other choice at this point in time. And so I've pretty much given my life to the creation and development of this and being able to get it into the world. So that was kind of a long answer, Richard, I think, to what put me on this path.
If I may play the devil's advocate, I've heard it said that we can only take in so much information, otherwise it's going to kind of fry the circuits. And I'm just wondering about any concerns in that regard. I mean, you're opening up these new pathways that may have never been opened before. Were there and or are there any concerns to that degree that this could be a little too much for some folks? Their brains just aren't developed enough in that regard? Or does that have anything to do with it?
No, and that's a great question. And so the point to this is first of all, we're the contacts that we make in the body are very, very gentle. So the energy that moves to the brain, we're hypothesizing based on what we see after the after effect shown in the brain lighting up on EEG, is that through these gentle contacts, this energy is moving into the higher brain, but it's a gentle nudge. Okay, this isn't like a circuit overload. It's a gentle nudge. But here's the thing, is that there's just inordinate amounts of evolutionary potential waiting to come online in those higher centers of the brain. They're latent. It's untapped potential. And so what happens is when that's gently nudged, a gentle nudge of energy into the brain, the dramatic response in people that comes next, and you can actually see this during a demonstration. Again, that's why we do the live events. You can see this wave of energy and breath start to create feedback in the person's body. They can stop it, but the feeling is it feels amazing and they don't want to. But that dramatic response that comes next is a product of their brain. It's their physiology creating the feedback. And so it's doing what it wants to do and needs to do now that it's starting to wake up to help itself come online. And that's why it's really quite safe and quite effective, is because the facilitator is not really introducing force into the body. It's not a therapeutic type event or technique. It's actually a gentle touch, but the power that's latent in those higher centers of your brain is just extraordinary. And so when that starts to come online, very dramatic things start to happen. Here's an analogy that I think might make some sense within this. If we imagined, I'll use a really probably inaccurate evolutionary example. If at some point in time a species has these wings, these proto wings or something that show up, these feathered wings, but they haven't really learned how to use them effectively to take flight. In fact, there's research now that's shown, in fact, that species did develop these feathered appendages before they actually took flight, and they're not even sure from an evolutionary perspective that was the original intent or what the adaptation was for. But in any event, so we have these kind of these proto wings on this new creature through evolution, and they're kind of just laying there, right? I'm making a reference between these wings and our higher brain. And so imagine if you could take those wings that were just kind of laying there and you gently started to nudge them through that range of motion that they were actually designed to start flapping. And once that happened, it's like they kind of woke up and start flapping on their own, and then they start flapping very dramatically, and then they learn how to take flight. So that's kind of what we're doing, is we're just nudging that part of the brain gently, and it's starting to wake up and go, wow, all of this potential is here. It's found a pathway now to cycle energy up into itself, and it starts to pull that energy up and starts to create that feedback to further self-energize.
Yeah, it's interesting the way you describe it. I my mind goes to, of course, the Darwinian theories of evolution and so forth that were described in his work, and I understand where he was coming from, because he never stated that he had conclusive. He had never conclusively stated, this is the way that it is, end of story, don't even ask any other questions, because this is the way that it is.
Right.
He was questioning all the way up to the end, just like the rest of us are doing. And so I have to ask you, this process that you have discovered is, on the one hand, it is a natural process that people are doing around the world through different means, but it's a much slower, if you will, process. Now, yours is not necessarily hyperspace. It's the way you describe it, it's gentle in that respect. But it seems to speed up that evolutionary process.
Yes.
Do you see yourself as, shall we say, an instrument of sorts of the universe and the universe's evolutionary process for man?
Boy, Richard, you're not letting me off with the easy questions, are you? No, I'm just kidding. That's a wonderful question. And the truth is that you and I are very much in alignment with what we like to talk about, think about, and
yeah.
I believe do in the world. And so what I believe is that, yes, I do believe I am, but I also believe that all of us either are or have the potential to be.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that happens when we start to wake up into that higher part of the brain is that we start realizing that we are part of this unfolding evolutionary process. In fact, not only are we part of it, but we're the leading edge of it. And once you're awake to that, I believe there's a certain responsibility within that to help promote the unfolding in what I believe is very non-Darwinian terms. In fact, we're talking now about conscious evolution, that the evolution itself is awake in us. And what we do next is an evolutionary mechanism,
mm-hmm.
and that we can choose to align ourselves in a way that promotes this evolution within ourselves. And I think that in the higher concepts of higher brain living, you know, people don't have to get all of this or embrace all of this to go in and go through the program and create a new life. But I think on the higher levels of this, that shift from the lower stress brain into the higher, what I would call the higher enlightened brain, that new physiology, a new way of being in the world, I think a hallmark of that next stage of growth and evolution is that we become conscious of the evolutionary process and consciously promoting the evolutionary process. And I think that that is what's happening through higher brain living. And I don't think there's anything more natural and more organic than being awake to the fact that we are the leading edge of this process and what we do counts. You have to choose, and that we can make choices that further this unfolding. And I think that when we really wake up to this next level, that becomes a defining feature of our life and our culture, that we are, we are kind of giving ourselves over to this act of becoming, on higher and higher and higher levels.
We're talking with Dr. Michael Cotton. He's the founder and the co-owner of Higher Brain Living. Higher Brain Living is the concept, if you will, the technique. It is the website, higherbrainliving.com, and you can certainly get information there as well. This fascinates me to no end, only because I've been around a puff of 54, 55 years, next to nothing. As most of us, my father, he's in his early mid 80s. My mother is in her 80s, still alive and doing well. And we used to go over to their house on Sunday afternoons, my present wife and I, and we'd sit and we would have some of the most incredible conversations. I was introduced to some books by her that she had shared with me. One in particular that came to mind when you were talking about the various energy centers. I remember it was a book called Joy's Way, and it talked about the chakras. And it wasn't just the seven. It's like this particular book showed that there were energy centers all over the body, in the joints in particular, but then other places as well. And I mean, and it just, it's like, wow, okay, there aren't just seven. Okay, that's very interesting. And then, of course, I'm familiar with the meridians, especially with Chinese acupuncture and acupressure and all of these different things with the Eastern teachings, especially, for example, Kundalini energy coming up the spine and these types of things. And I guess my next question to you has to do, I'm going to quote a biblical passage to try to elucidate. Jesus told his disciples, who were utterly dumbfounded and mesmerized by the things that he was doing, and I think that they asked, well, can we do this stuff? And he said, oh yeah, but this stuff, you guys are going to do greater things than this. What are the greater things that we're going to be able to do if we tap into this energy, we tap into the higher brain?
Yeah, I, okay, boy, that you, That one is gonna take a moment.
You go for it. We've got the time.
Well, I think that what we're talking about here is the creation of a new human and the creation of a new culture. And I always keep a foot in science. It's just my personal way I like to think. I don't want to throw out critical thinking or analysis or any of that, but I also don't want to be afraid to venture into those places that maybe aren't typically embraced by academic communities and that type of thing. And so what I believe is that our species is on the verge of another shift in consciousness and culture. And I'm not obviously the only one saying this. In fact, that we have evidence, historical evidence, that over the last 100,000 years, there's been about 5 major transformations of consciousness and culture that have happened in human civilizations, where to use the terms, for instance, of the great developmentalist and historian Jean Gebser, he referred to these 5 major, he referred to them as epochs. Mm-hmm. So that we had this archaic epoch that then gave way to this transformation of consciousness into magical consciousness, and then into mythic consciousness, and then into the rational consciousness, and into now what we have as our postmodern consciousness, or our pluralistic consciousness. But we're at this stage where, I mean, you said it earlier, we look around you, we're in gridlock, things aren't working right.
Yeah,
and so that is preceding what many developmental psychologists and sociologists believe is, and I personally believe, is that we're trying to get to this next epoch, what I call the sixth epoch, or this integral wave of development. And when that shift happens, again, what I believe is one of the defining features is we no longer see the world what I would call horizontally. We see the world vertically. We see that we are part of a 13.8 billion year evolutionary unfolding. And we're now waking up to that and knowing that how we live our life makes a difference. And I believe that from that place, everything changes as it has in these 5 previous epochs before. The political systems change, the educational systems change, the communities change, the social structures change, the financial sector changes, that we basically are creating a new world that is one that's driven by these evolutionary values, these values that our life becomes defined with, being in alignment with this beautiful blossoming that's happening, and that we are aligning ourselves with this evolutionary impulse to be able to create something new. And that for those of us at the leading edge, which I believe are all of us, we're kind of charged with the responsibility of creating this new culture. And so this new culture is one that's inclusive, but it honors and promotes vertical evolution, not just horizontal stagnation.
Right.
And that this sixth epoch is not a guarantee. That's the thing. 99.9% of all species that have ever walked this planet are now gone. And along with most of the great human civilizations. And so what I am insisting is that there are these major epochs or transformations of human consciousness and human culture. And I'm insisting that those have lined up at least loosely with biological evolution in the human brain, and that these epochs are represented with corollaries in the structure of the brain, which has been laid down in evolution in layers. Mm. And the highest, most recent, most evolved layer has to get energy, has to wake up, has to become fully functional for us to really be able to create or make this shift or this transformation into this new consciousness, a new culture.
Extraordinary. I'm sitting here and I'm listening to you, and one of the questions that I've asked many of my guests over the last couple of 3 years is derived more out of the levels of frustration that I am aware of and that I feel from time to time about our present culture. And so I'm going to put this question to you because I think that you're going to have a very interesting response to this. We see how our society has been for the last 1,000, 2,000 years. And from my observations, and again, I've only been here 54, 55 years. I haven't been here very long. Okay? I haven't been observing very long, but I've seen enough and I've heard enough of history that I have to ask the question, has man earned or does he deserve the right to continue as a species? Now, I'm not talking about annihilation. I'm basically saying, Doctor, at one point we say, no more procreation. That's it. We're done. We haven't learned a damn thing. We haven't progressed one iota as a society, as a culture globally. We continue to feed, as the phrase goes, the machine. It's all about consumerism. Mm-hmm. and the haves and the have-nots and on. We haven't grown beyond that. So does man deserve to? Does he have the right to? Is he entitled to continue on as a species? And do you see him continuing on, or will we wipe ourselves out?
Well, I think that's the crossroads we're at. And my personal opinion is I acknowledge the doom and gloom scenario because it is very, very real. There's no doubt about that. There's a perfect storm out there for all kinds of catastrophic changes. Now, one thing I will say within that is that what I'm also really sure of is that what man runs the risk of, mankind, is destroying mankind, not really ultimately destroying nature or the biosphere or Gaia or whatever your term is for that, mm-hmm. because it's going to adapt if it ends up that we destroy our species, okay, which is not what I think will happen, but it is a realistic possibility. But if we end up that the species perishes, I think there's no conceivable way that we could have done enough damage to nature for nature to perish. It's too, it is going to move on. Evolution is going to continue down different paths. It will try new experiments without us.
Well, but I mean, you've seen the different competitive television programs, you know, American Idol, and you see the cooking shows, Hell's Kitchen and so forth. And they've got to knock people off and get rid of because they can only have one. And I'm sitting here going, there's a council out there somewhere that's watching what's going on. And they're going to come to a point and say, you know what? They're done. They're done. Get out. Give me your apron. You are done. Get out.
And what I think, how I think that really happens, Richard, is that when enough of us, when enough people make the shift into that higher brain, mm-hmm. create that and start converting those temporary state experiences into permanent traits where we really start to live that way, mm-hmm. when that happens, a significant minority can create widespread influence. Mm-hmm. And so I think that as we start to wake up and we start to make the change, that we're in effect creating the future. And so I don't mean this to sound elitist or egotistical, even from a human-centered perspective, but we really have a certain, I believe, responsibility to make this happen. That on one level, we are part of the solution. And so if we can wake up and start living in these new authentic ways, then I believe that, you know, things can we can make this shift and things can come back into alignment. But I believe that our future is not in our past. What we have to do is move forward. This thing, the solution is not regression. I don't even believe back to simpler times. I believe that's impossible.
Yeah, you and me both.
Yeah, I believe the solution is to move beyond where we are, where we can create the simplicity on the other side of this complexity in altogether new ways.
This is the way that I've termed it, my analogy. We have this lifeboat, and it will accommodate every human life that exists. However, there is only one condition for you to enter, to come on board, and that is that you must be willing to let go of the old ways of doing things because they don't work, and we're not taking them with us. And there will be those who will say, fine, I'm not going. And it's like, well, you know, you have a lot to offer, and we don't want to lose that, but it's your choice.
Yes. And what I believe, Richard, and this is why I believe higher brain living can be a major player in this, is what you, when you made the comment, you have to be willing to give up the old way of being. Here's the challenge that comes into this. Millions of years of evolution with and solidification within our lower brain has created mechanisms and strategies, biological mandates, if you will, to not let go of the old ways, because the old ways are what has created survival within the species up to this point in time. And so there's a biological imperative in there to for the lower brain, which is operating below the conscious threshold. Its job is to keep us safe. It evolved at a time when the environment was predator rich, but the research shows us it's still dominant in us today, operating below the conscious threshold.
Yeah.
Everything happening in our modern world and modern lives is coming in and being filtered through a very primitive survival mechanism that has no idea how to adapt to or deal with the complexity of the modern world. So what does it do to deal with it? It habituates sameness. Because whatever you did yesterday, last week, last month, led to you being alive today. It's allowed us to have this conversation. You're alive. Your lower evolution worked. Your lower brain succeeded. Mm-hmm. Therefore, whatever you did yesterday, last week, and the month before, it's going to hardwire in. It's going to habituate those areas of your life because sameness is equal to safety. You did not get eaten by a tiger. You were not attacked by a predator by showing up in a lousy relationship or getting credit card collectors calling you or having a zero balance in your bank account or being in a career that sucked your soul and you hated going to. And all the time you say, I want to change, I'm going to change, I need to change. But the lower brain is saying, oh, no, you don't. Change is risky. We don't know what's out there. We know this territory and it's safe. So it actually starts to wire in those pathways that habituate the life that's kept you safe to this point in time. And that's why it becomes biologically or physiologically challenging to make change. It's not enough just to change our thoughts or our beliefs or our visions or our dreams. We must also change our physiology, or that lower brain hijacks those lofty ideas and thoughts and dreams and visions and drags them back into that creation of the same life.
And this can't be done necessarily just through, you know, not, I don't want to say better living through chemistry, but what I mean by that is that we change our diets. You know, we get off of all of the processed foods. We start eating more natural, more organic, et cetera, et cetera. And that's going to help to modify the physiology. And maybe we can then begin the process of rewiring. It doesn't quite work that way.
Well, I believe all of that is helpful. And I believe that I also don't want to claim to have an exclusive on helping people's brains function at a higher level. Mm-hmm. I believe there are lots of things that do that. What I believe is that this system is just incredibly powerful, consistent, repeatable, and works for the vast majority of people that go through the program. The response is much quicker, much more integrated, and it happens at much higher levels in much less time, I believe, than with anything else on the planet. But I want to also add a remarkable thing about people who go through this program is once they start to wake up and they start to remap their life, what else they do, Richard, is start to do all of those things you just mentioned, start to eat healthier diets and seek out organic produce and do all of those things, because they can receive benefit on them now that their brain is in a state of growth and thriving as opposed to sameness and surviving. Mm. And when it's locked into those survival patterns, what I'm insisting is that it takes a lot of stuff to put in yourself to get the benefit, because something inside you doesn't really want to change.
Yeah, I hear you. Before we run out of time, let me ask you, I have three questions for you. The first is, who is Michael Cotton?
Michael Cotton is the, I'm going to answer this in the manifest way of without being too esoteric here. Michael Cotton is the creator and developer of Higher Brain Living. It is my honor and privilege to be able to do what I do every day, to see the impact that is made on people's lives, and to be amongst a group of people that are seriously committed to helping the next emergence of consciousness and culture and brain function happen on this planet. And to see that glorious new blossoming become available for all of us.
And so you've sort of answered my second question, but I'll ask it anyway. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Yes, and that is it. What I want to, and again, this is what I want, not necessarily what every person and the end users or the clients or the recipients of this have to want. It's okay if what they simply want is to improve any element of their life, to get more energy into their brain. But what I'm really in this for at the end of the day is to see that we create new community from this, and that we create a new significant minority that hits a tipping point, that there's a collective change, widespread social change, and we create a new culture and a new consciousness, and that upload into the higher brain is available across the species.
I mean, just thinking about the possibilities it's very exciting from my point of view. Mm-hmm. Who inspires you?
I would say, I would like to borrow the line from Isaac Newton right now, who said when talking about some of his breakthrough with Newtonian physics, that he stood on the shoulder of giants. And so I have had so many inspirations in my life. If I'm kind of forced to pick one right now, I would say the American philosopher Ken Wilber, whose work on and his Integral Institute have been highly instrumental in integrating my thought and helping me create accurate maps of the territory of what we're really doing with this technique.
I want to thank you so much for taking so much time with us today, and wish you much success in your endeavors. And I want to let our listeners know especially that if you are listening to the radio broadcast, there is more. It's what's called the afterview. And what you're going to hear is the rest of this one-hour interview with my guest. And his name is Dr. Michael Cotton. He is the founder, the creator, the co-owner of the Higher Brain Living program, and it's available at, you can find out more about it at higherbrainliving.com. That's higherbrainliving.com. I think one of my synapses disconnected there for a moment. And find out more. And again, thank you so much. This has been extraordinary. And again, I wish you much success with the concept. And I'm hoping that, we can move forward in our process. I don't know what we're going to be doing, but I suppose I don't have to know. I just the fact that we get to move on from this silliness to something greater and more profound would be nice.
Thank you very much, Richard. Do you mind if I quickly also mention that we have attend an event page on our website?
Please,
I'm going to be doing a couple of live events on the West Coast, and they're coming up pretty quickly, and you can find that information on our website under the attend an event. If you scroll down, you'll see the list of locations.
Well, and when you're in the area of Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
That would be fantastic.
Maybe we can set that up. Again, Absolutely. Dr. Michael Cotton, thank you so much. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.